Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome and good morning. Sunday, March 2nd, 2025. We've entered that month that it's my favorite month other than those great summer months. I mean, it's tourney time, hockey tourney time, hoops tourney time. It's warm enough, but yet there's a little snow, keeps you on your toes. And how about Josh Wheeler just running with the board and all the programming this morning? What a star. Josh,
doing it all.
Josh doing it all. When I heard you filling in, I was just going to text you and say, why don't you take Sunday take as well? I'll just enjoy my cup of coffee. But I came in to give you a little break.
So. I wish I had the connections you have.
But it's all good.
One
it's
day.
It's all good. We were going to, and previewed on Friday in the newsletter that we were going to have Representative Brad Finstead. We're going to have Representative Finstead next weekend, and we're going to talk about all that's going on in Washington, how he feels about it, and what its impacts are on Minnesota, which is going to be a theme here, I think, in the near term. Not just news coverage, not just the politics of it, but really the policy and the impact of it. And so this week is budget forecast week. So on Thursday, the State Office of Management and Budget will release the final forecast that will determine the guidance and the numbers for the state budget, which all intents and purposes has to be done by June 30th to avoid a state government shutdown. Now, we know that the legislature is divided. We understand Governor Walz has already put out a budget. And we know that the legislature kind of got a slow start for a few different reasons. But that forecast will set the tone and really give us a look at reality of what it could mean. Now, the last forecast was after the election, but before President Trump took office. The moves of President Trump with related to federal funding cuts it is not clear. And that, like your home budget, would make things a little tense, a little anxious. And as you think about those things, I think that's how lawmakers of both parties are feeling. I think that's probably how the governor is feeling, because we get a ton of money from the feds. Minnesota is also a net exporter of dollars, so we send more money to Washington than we get back. And so those cuts mean we're still sending money to Washington, even though we're not getting as much back. And that funds transportation programs, education programs, economic development programs, environmental programs, agriculture. But the one we're going to focus on today is health and human services. And on the show today, we're going to have Senator Jordan Rasmussen. He's a Republican. He's followed these issues very carefully. And we're going to have Representative Mohammed Noor. He's a Democrat. We're going to talk to Representative Noor first, but just to put it in perspective. And then a couple headlines today, if you're home having your coffee, reading your Sunday paper. In the Star Tribune, atop of the front page story about the detainees on these immigration raids. Counter that with the story in Axios this morning. Business groups quietly push back against Trump's immigration raids. You've heard me say it on this station. It's one of the things we watch closely at Fluence Advisory is labor and the squeeze. We're short workers already. We're going to be more short workers. And so how do we make up for workers? It's one of the things I've been spending a lot of time reading, listening about. And my latest discovery yesterday was a podcast about humanoids, these new robots that are coming, Josh. They're going to come and they're going to make all these jobs obsolete, so they say. But we've been hearing about this for years, right? That robots are going to take over the world?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see it. We'll believe it when we see it. And then another story that I found good read this morning is a crash course in civics. It's a little background on where Elon Musk was inspired, if that's what the word you want to say, for his approach to the federal government. Those are the topics. I think they'll be the buzz here going. So we're going to forecast the forecast, and we'll do that with Representative Mohammed Noor when we come back on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Sunday Take, joining me now, Senator Jordan Rasmussen. He's from Senate District 9. It's up in north central, almost northwest Minnesota. He follows Health and Human Services. He's following the budget carefully, and I'm looking forward to his perspective as a Republican in the Senate. Senator Rasmussen, thanks for joining me today.
Good morning, Blaise. Thanks for having me.
So, obviously, Thursday, the budget forecast comes out. The last budget forecast showed about $600 million on the bottom line for this biennium, but then a forecast of a $5 billion shortfall. We now have, you know, some sense of potential cuts from Washington and in Medicaid funding, which is, you know, over half of Minnesota's Medicaid budget. How are you looking at this budget? What do you expect from this forecast?
Unfortunately, Blaise, we have a budget mess here in Minnesota that the Democrats created when they had single-party control for 2 years. And when we think about going back to 2023, the Democrats started with an $18 billion surplus, increased state government spending by nearly 40%, spending that surplus. And now, as you just said, we're looking at a long-term $5 billion deficit. And I think we shouldn't be surprised that when you increase state government spending by 40% in one budget cycle, that's going to create some fiscal issues. And unfortunately, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris basically did the same thing at the federal level, where this last year we're approaching almost a $2 trillion run rate deficit at the federal level, which drew inflation up and is creating, you know, lots of issues across the economy. And so that's my big focus. And I'm anxious to see the February forecast on Thursday so that we can really get to the work of creating a budget that gets Minnesota back on track this year.
Department of Human Services has said that they propose right now a budget that's about $1.3 billion smaller over the next few years. You know, especially your district in north central Minnesota, but you hear from providers all over the state just the fragility of our healthcare system, which is funded by Medicaid in many ways. And in fact, rural residents are even more dependent on Medicaid than urban suburban residents. Can you talk about how you, when you look at the numbers, what do you see that's fixable? Is there a solution in your eyes considering the uncertainty from the federal government?
Well, when we look at what Governor Walz proposed in human services, it's largely driven by two things. One is he's proposing a $460 million property tax increase by shifting human services costs onto our counties. And we had a press conference and a hearing on this where counties said that this could increase property taxes anywhere from 5 to 9% without any additional services. So I think, you know, that's important for folks to understand, is that that's part of the savings that Governor Walz is proposing is coming through this property tax increase. And then the second big driver of those cuts is just an arbitrary cap on spending for disability services and long-term care. And I do think we need to be concerned about the long-term growth in spending that we see in these areas, but there are smarter ways to do it. For example, we have some services that are largely cost-based reimbursement, where we effectively give providers incentives to spend more so that they can get higher reimbursement in the future. And we need to look at programs that better align incentives to help bend that cost curve going forward for human services spending.
When you talk about your counties, one of the challenges is obviously that rural counties just haven't had the population growth. They don't have the property value wealth that, say, suburbs and exurbs that have grown. Are there other places in the county that make sense? And has the state done this to the counties before? And how do the counties deal with it? Because I know between staffing and other issues, the counties are challenged to provide these services as well.
I'll give you one example from a county that I represent, Traverse County, which has the lowest population of any county in the state of Minnesota, about 1,400 households. And what Governor Walz has proposed here would be about a $400,000 increase, which is about $280 per household in Traverse County alone. And so I think, again, this cost shift, it's not like the counties can really control how many people they have in disability services, how many people they have civilly committed at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. But these are costs that the state is just going to bill to the counties. And again, I think we need to actually look at reform around eligibility, human services, efficiencies, investing in technology that will allow us to embrace new payment models. So Governor Walz is basically just doing a shift and a cap, and there really isn't any real human services reform in his budget.
All right, step back, Senator Rasmussen. You've seen, you know, the first, you know, month plus of the Trump administration. You've followed what's happening in D.C. I'm guessing you've talked to members of the congressional delegation. Without this being partisan, if you're just in a room without having to take a vote, knowing you have a financial background, what do you do at the federal level that helps Minnesota? Or how do you look at the whole picture of the way in which, you know, some of the uncertainty out of Washington is causing even more angst as we get ready for Thursday's budget forecast?
You know, for me, and I think this is something that Minnesotans should care about, all Americans should care about. As the youngest member of the Senate Republican Caucus, I really care about this, is our federal government having a nearly $2 trillion run rate deficit and tens of trillions of dollars in national debt. And, you know, we kind of saw under the Joe Biden administration just a complete lack of fiscal responsibility. And so we do need to look at how we are going to make the books balance in the future. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for reform when you dig into these agencies. We had the Government Accountability Office at the federal level found just in 2023 that there was more than $100 billion in payment errors in Medicare and Medicaid. And the thing about the federal government is, because its budget is so big, if you're able to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse and focus services on the people who really need it, you can actually generate quite a few savings. And I think we can do that at the state level. I think we can do that at the federal level. And we need to make sure that we're respecting the tax dollars that hardworking Minnesotans give us.
You talk about it in HHS, but we do know that, you know, the first Trump term, there was significant spending. They're showing that they're very interested in cutting right now. That those cuts are going to hit. They're going to hit your communities that you represent. They're going to hit Minnesotans. What's your message to them about how these cuts, how to get through these cuts? How do they, you know, survive? Because as you know, the human nature is it's about now, not about, you know, worrying about this deficit in the future.
Well, I think it's important to note that when Congress is looking at a budget resolution, it's over a 10-year window. And so you do actually have an opportunity to really have reform in how services are provided. And I think that's where I would encourage folks to take a look at is how can we be more efficient and effective? And, you know, if you think that the federal government, the state government has maxed out opportunities to be more efficient and effective, you know, I can give you some stories that we've just seen here in Minnesota where we look at just under Governor Walz, more than $500 million in known public services fraud. And then on top of that, we see a lot of wasteful spending, whether it's wanting to have freebies for illegal immigrants in terms of college tuition, health care, tax credits. So there's a lot of opportunity to really focus on putting families first, to protect the most vulnerable that we have in society. But we can't just, you know, continue to have this irresponsible spending. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a situation like Minnesota is, where we took a huge record surplus, and now we're looking at a very serious deficit.
The Senate seems to be acting in a more bipartisan way than it did the last 2 years. Obviously, Senate Democrats had the one-seat majority. They pushed through a lot of things with their House colleagues during the trifecta. But there just seems to be, in presenting bills, in sharing information and co-sponsoring each other's bills, a little more cooperation. Democrats have a new, quote, Blue Dogs Caucus, end quote. Are you having conversations this session with Democrats about spending, about the budget, that maybe you didn't have 2 years ago, that there is a little bit of bipartisan reality check?
I think there has been, and we'll have to see how the rest of session goes forward. I do think it was helpful in the Senate that we started with this power-sharing agreement, and so we had co-chairs for the first 3 weeks and only heard bipartisan bills, and I think that helped set the tone, hopefully, in the Senate. And I think, you know, we're going to have to work together, Democrats and Republicans, if we're going to solve the budget issues that our state has and really try to deliver for Minnesotans. And I think, you know, on the Senate Human Services Committee, we've, under the leadership of Senator Abler and Senator Hoffman, has always been a very bipartisan committee that tries to put the people that we serve first.
Senator Jordan Rasmussen, I know we'll talk down the line, and I appreciate joining the show.
Thank you, Blythe. Good to be with you.
Have a great Sunday. So there you heard it. I mean, and I see your text coming in that there's finger pointing going on. And I work really hard not to have this be a finger pointing show. But I hear what you're saying is that this is this constant blame. And you've heard me say it here before that we have to start solving problems, that I'm emotionally detached from either party. And what I'm trying to do here is lay out the facts and the figures. And it is a fact that a lot of the spending of the last 2 years was driven by the trifecta. So that's a fact, but we have to deal with it. It's also a fact that President Trump increased the federal deficit as well. Those two things are not mutually exclusive, but we're in this era now, and we have to look towards the future. When we come back, this week's take and more on Minnesota and the forecast of the forecast. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on the Sunday Take, News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm your host, Blois Olson. And the topic here is forecasting the forecast. This coming Thursday, the state of Minnesota will release its budget forecast, which is more uncertain than it has been in the last few years. The previous forecast that was released in December showed a shortfall of $5 billion in the out years. That was before the current administration, the Trump administration, took office and began to push forward with Medicaid cuts, government cuts, etc. And one of the things that I see in your text is that, you know, you don't want finger pointing. I don't either. In fact, I work really hard to make sure that we have guests on the show that aren't finger pointing. But I'm not going to cut them off just because they, you know, blame the other party. I think Senator Rasmussen offered some insight into the numbers and how we get there. We had invited and had planned on having Representative Mohammed Noor join us. For some reason, he didn't, and we'll hopefully have him in a conversation in the future. But I think this brings to light the feeling we so many people are having. And I think that the feeling, I can speak for myself, and I don't like to project, but in the conversations I've had, is that the unease of everybody in this administration with the Trump style is real. We experience this kind of day at a time, headline at a time, tweet at a time, distracted government for 4 years. This time, you know, it is impacting people in an even more direct way. Take federal workers. I talked to a federal worker who said for 14 years, their job was remote. And somehow now they're supposed to work in person, even though they did their job well for 14 years. I overheard a conversation the other day about a federal employee who is assigned to a different federal office than Minneapolis. But they may have to go into the Minneapolis office to report to their Kansas City office. I think you can cut this one of two ways. There were at-home workers and hybrid workers before the pandemic, and there are have been some since. But how do we do that? One of the texts asks, what's the cost of providing health care for undocumented or, you know, immigrants who are not legally here? I don't know that cost. I will try to dig it up. But that cost alone does not solve this problem. And I think that's the topic for the take this week, is that no one thing ever is the reason or the solution for how we solve complex issues. Elections aren't won based on one thing. Budget problems aren't solved based on one thing. The idea that Republicans pushed back from Minnesota on Medicaid cuts this week is a good sign. But also, look deeper into the makeup of Congress. One of the biggest issues that Republicans with very slim majorities are going to have is convincing their most fiscally conservative members of these budgets that don't cut far enough for their mind, or don't freeze spending far enough for them, or, listen, wait for it, that the Trump tax cut extension leads us off a more dangerous fiscal cliff. Anybody knows that on the ledger, you can't make one adjustment on one side of the ledger without it impacting the other side of the ledger. And that cuts a few different ways in Minnesota. It cuts in a way that the federal government can't do stuff without it affecting Minnesota, and then Minnesota has to do stuff which then affects our counties and our residents. And so we're all trying to have a more balanced ledger. I would argue that I don't know what the number is, but there's no doubt that you can find more efficiency and cost effectiveness in government. That the answer can't be that we just keep spending the way we have. But the answer can't be that we cut people off either, because there's a moral imperative as well. If somebody who's an undocumented immigrant shows up to a hospital with life-threatening injury, do we treat them or don't we? We do. At some point, that has a cost. Sometimes that cost the last few years has been higher. Heard a podcast of the Massachusetts governor said, we needed workers. Ron DeSantis sent us undocumented immigrants to Massachusetts. We worked. We found them jobs, etc. To what cost? I started this take talking about AI and this labor shortage that we have and what federal workers are going to do and what we're going to do for the workforce of the future. Too often, talk radio or cable TV or social media suggests some simple solution. But I am here to tell you that this Minnesota budget solution can't be simple. It is complex. We are at a fork in the road, and we have to find a way to make that work. You know, I think about this stuff a lot, and I value your feedback. You can follow us at thedailyagenda.com, put out our newsletters, email me at bloisholson@gmail.com with any suggestions for future shows. So that's one thing to think about. Here's a text. And by the way, this is potentially happening. Why doesn't the federal government close and repurpose or sell federal buildings and have everyone remote? It's absurd we can't determine productivity and fire those who aren't working. So that was news this week, that they may consolidate federal buildings in Minnesota and cut, just like businesses are consolidating office space. But then you look at it in D.C. and you look at the message of the president, and he says everybody has to go back to work. So which is it? Work remote or be in the office? That's the inconsistency of this president that lands the wrong way and builds more anxiety. Ultimately, that's what the leader shouldn't do, is build anxiety frivolously, whether it's state or federal. So Thursday, we'll have the forecast. Next week, I'll have Brad Finstead on the program. We'll have some updates with Vanita throughout the week, Monday through Thursday. And the huddle will come up next. The Wild play at 2:30. You know, we're getting down to the edge of college basketball season, Josh.
Yeah, March is here.
March is here.
Let the madness begin.
Let the madness begin.
Are you a March Madness guy?
I am. I have been, and okay. And I am more and more.
Yep.
I would say that I've affectionately become re-energized to college basketball, thanks to my daughter going to Kansas. Mm. They're having an underperforming year, but they could have a run, and yeah. they hang with everybody, and they beat teams they maybe shouldn't. And so, yeah, no, I'll be – and last year we went to a regional. We went to the regional in Boston where Illinois beat UConn. And I don't know about you, but I've come to appreciate the atmosphere of a good game.
Yeah.
As much as which teams are on the court or on the ice. Mm-hmm. If it's a good atmosphere, that adds to the experience. And I will tell you, that regional – between UConn and Illinois was a heck of an atmosphere. So
it's kind of like me in the state tournament last year. Never been until last year, and I
really
checked it out, and I couldn't believe how packed the lower bowl was. First of all, let alone just the X in general, but yeah, it was an amazing first time experience for me, because being 32, I just never know what the point of a grown up going to high school games is. I mean, once you're out of high school, yeah, you kind of stop going.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I will say that those experiences were part of the bond, yeah, with my kids that followed. And we were texting about section hockey just this week. He was asking for the login so he could watch, Josh, just for the record.
There you go.
The huddle's up next. I mean, Twins, we're right around the corner here. What's the expectation? And who's the owner going to be? I'm Blois. Until tomorrow morning.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
If you're the type of person who wants data not assumptions. Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
At 6:20 with Vanita. That's the take.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.